Leviticus. Let's try that again. Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, welcoming you today to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. And this is the first full week of the new year. We're excited about Blessings of Liberty in 2014. Today we're going to do just a little bit differently than normal as far as a subject is concerned. We're not in a series of any kind right now, but we're going to look today at the subject of football and freedom. That's a little bit different than we normally are dealing with, but I believe even if you do not like football, you will find this broadcast very interesting. We are going to look at some history here and also how this has entered into the politics of our country and several different things. So we want you to stay tuned today, and we want to welcome all of our listeners today. Noah, are you going to do that? Noah and I are we've switched places today. We've got a little different going on, but you'll just have to bear with us.
It's good to be here this morning. We do want to say welcome to all our listeners here. We do appreciate them, those who are listening in right here on AM 1450 WATA out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM WZAP AM 690 out of Bristol, Virginia. And also those who are listening in on KPGT 89.1 FM The Truth out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners. And the reason that Noah and I, we've switched places today is because, and I'm a little sad over this, but Noah's starting back to school next week, his college classes, and his schedule's going to be a little bit different this spring, and so he's not going to be able to be with us every week on the Blessings of Liberty like he has been. So I'm trying to learn a few things, and so you pray for both of us, but he has been right here just about the whole time, and so I appreciate that, but his schedule this semester is just not going to allow him to be here for the live radio broadcast. But anyway, we appreciate him. So we're going to look today at the subject of football and freedom. Football and freedom. And I want to say, first of all, just the material, a lot of the things that I'm going to share with you today comes from a gentleman. His name is John J. Miller, and John J. Miller is an author. He has written several books, and the latest book that he has written is entitled The Big Scrum, How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football. And he gave a lecture last September at the campus of Hillsdale College. Now, I have received a publication from Hillsdale College for several years. I don't even remember when, probably more than 10, 12, maybe even 15 years. And they send out there's a conservative private college, and the name of it is Hillsdale, and they have this publication, and it's called Imprimis, and I receive that every month. Most of the time, it's a very good publication. And most of the time, maybe something along the lines of history, something about the economy, all kinds of things. But it's a conservative college and a conservative publication. They have a lot of things about the Constitution and the history of our country. But back in September, I received this, and Mr. Miller had given a lecture on the subject of football and the American character. And when I seen that, I thought, what has that got to do with anything? And so, but curiosity got the best of me, and I read it, and I was very interested by the time that I got done. So I'm going to share some of the things with you from that lecture and Mr. Miller, his book, The Big Scrum, How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football. And I'll just say for the record, I have not read the book. And but he wrote the book, so I just wanted to put that out there by way of just being honest about where we have gotten our information from. But through this article and then some study after that, I've learned some very interesting history about football and freedom. And I thought this would be interesting, our first full week back in the new year on Blessings of Liberty. Now, there are no verses in the Bible saying anything pro or con about football. I'll just say that right off the bat. Now, a real diehard fan might say, well, what about the Eagles? You know, Eagles are mentioned in the Bible, the Bears, the Lions, Giants, Chiefs. You got all these kind of things. But just to be honest, and I'd be stretching it to try to put that in the context of the Scripture. Now, I do believe the Apostle Paul was aware of the world of athletics in his day and time. The Apostle Paul used many different sports analogies in his writings. You read about the Apostle Paul, you're going to read about running a race. You're going to read about obtaining a prize. And that's in the context of a contest is what he's talking about. He mentions wrestling, and that is a reference to actual what we would think of as wrestling, the sport. And he talks about striving. And that is like a runner that would be trying to win a race. He talks about fighting. What we would refer to that as boxing. And so Paul knew about athletics, and he used a lot of this language to illustrate truths in the Christian's life. Now, in Paul's day, the big athletic event, the biggest athletic event, was the Olympics. They had the Olympics even then. And so Paul knew about these things, and he used it to make comparisons to the Christian life. Now, in our day, the Olympics is coming up here in February, the Winter Olympics. But in our day, in America, the biggest sport is, without a doubt, the sport of football. Football has now surpassed baseball as America's pastime. It's bigger, especially the Super Bowl. I mean, it's seen all around the world in many different countries. And so football is a big spectator sport in America. Most people do not know it, but in the beginning of football, there was a movement to ban football altogether. Now, I've talked about this before, a little over 100 years ago. If you look at our country, historically speaking, and in the politics of our nation, 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago now, we begin to see the rise of the progressives in American politics. We even have, we certainly have progressives today. In fact, Hillary Clinton, in 2007, I believe it was, she described herself when she was in the debate for running for president, putting her, you know, when that was before they had decided on Obama's going to be the candidate, and Hillary and Obama, and I can't remember who else, but Hillary Clinton described her political mindset as being a progressive. And so we do have progressives, but they go back to just a little over 100 years ago. Now, progressives then and now are all about regulation. They want to regulate everything. And I will give a Bible verse right here. Proverbs 28, verse number 2 says, "For the transgression of a land, many are the princes thereof." And we have this principle in the Word of God that loss, that when there is much sin in the land, we lose our freedom. For the transgression, that's sin, of a land, many are the princes thereof. And loss of freedom through excessive regulation is actually the judgment of the Lord upon a nation. And so we see that even today in America. But progressives are trying to create, through regulating everything, this government-controlled utopia. They have in their minds that government can protect everybody from everything, that the government can feed everybody, clothe everybody, medicate everybody, keep everybody safe by outlawing just about everything under the sun. They want to keep us safe, this is their way of thinking, from personal choice and personal responsibility by deciding everything for us. And we could give many, many examples of that. Guns are under attack. I went to the gun show a few weeks ago down at Hickory, and I can't remember the exact number, but there was a t-shirt down there and it said something like this. The number escapes my mind, but I'm going to just say 20 million gun owners harmed no one today. And how true that is. Yes, there is such a thing as gun violence, but the great, great majority of people who legally own guns harm no one. They are responsible with their firearms. But those who would regulate everything, they just say, take them all away, ban everything as far as had to do with a firearm. Governments in the United States are continually attacking raw milk. The Amish have had one lawsuit after another over the subject of just selling raw milk to their neighbors. Well, our nation was raised once upon a time on people having their own cows and drinking, believe it or not, unpasteurized raw milk. But the government, regulators, the progressives, they would seek to keep us safe from the dangers of raw milk. And then a few weeks ago, now we see there's studies coming out saying that there's that vitamins, there's no good comes out of vitamins. And I read an article along those lines. Homeschoolers are under attack. The uninsured, for our own good, they're going to lump us all together in this new health care plan. And the unimmunized, maybe you keep up with immunizations and the controversy there, maybe you don't. But I don't believe that immunizations are always a good thing. Well, the government would have everybody, whether you believe in it or not, whether you want to or not, to get a flu shot, to get immunized for this and that, and on we could go. And even they would try to keep us safe from the sport of football. Now, here's an example. August 29th, 2013. The NFL agreed to pay $765 million to 4,500 players and their families that had brought a lawsuit concerning concussions. And so the NFL, they're going to pay out over the next, I don't know how many years, $765 million. And those who were watching this this lawsuit said that the NFL got off cheap on that. Well, there'll be more to follow, no doubt. Recently, a Colorado jury awarded $11.5 million to a high school student, a boy, who had suffered a paralyzing injury during practice in 2008. And I did some just a little bit of research this morning. If you wanted to, you could go to the internet, type in for a search, ban on football, and you'd be amazed at how many articles will come up, different high schools, different colleges, that in the past few years there has been a debate come up on getting rid of football. You see, once these heavy fines come in and these lawsuits, there will be more and more jump on the bandwagon. And what happens is, that's one way to regulate something out of existence, is these high payout lawsuits. And colleges and high schools and elementary schools will come to the place where they'll say, you know what, I don't know if we can afford to take the risk to have a football program. Now, last year, Mr. Obama, you know, he's famous for sticking his nose in everything coming and going. And he had something to say about the football controversy. Of course, we realize today he is a progressive. He is one who in his mind would seek to save us from ourselves, from our personal choice, from our personal freedoms. And he many times has put his two cents in on various subjects we could mention today. But he had this to say about football. He said, if I had a son, I'd have to think long and hard before I let him play football. And there was a doctor up in New Hampshire. He's trying to get football out of the school system. I read about a congressman that's trying to get football banned for, I believe, children under 11 years old, and on and on and on. As I studied about this, there's a man named Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote a book called The Tipping Point, and he is a big advocate for getting rid of football. This gentleman, Malcolm Gladwell, he says that football should go the way of dogfighting, that it should be outlawed and banned. So football is under attack today, but it's not the first time that it's ever been under attack. Now, I want to say some things about Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt, I really like him. Now, I don't agree with everything that he did. There were some things that he was a progressive about, but I like Teddy Roosevelt, but for no other reason, I like him because he was a manly man. Oh, that we had some manly men in our society today. Now, Teddy Roosevelt was a manly president. He was a manly leader. He was a leader if you've ever heard about the Rough Riders, Teddy Roosevelt, he was a hunter. I mean, he just had a very interesting life. He was a manly man. Now, he didn't start out that way. Teddy Roosevelt had asthma as a child, and his parents tried everything, even what we would say quack cures, to cure him of his asthma, even smoking cigars. I guess he developed a taste, because if you think of a picture of Teddy Roosevelt, I can think of a picture of him with a cigar in his mouth. But anyway, he had asthma growing up, and his parents tried everything to help him get over it, and they decided that he would just have to grow out of it. They encouraged him to go to the gym, and he got in a habit of going to the gym every day and exercising to overcome this, what we would say in our day and time, disability in his life. Well, he eventually did overcome asthma, and he contributed that to his to exercise and to being active. Now, Teddy Roosevelt was a freshman at Harvard University, November the 18th, 1876. He attended his first football game. The first football game Mr. Roosevelt ever seen was between Harvard and Yale, and Yale won the football game 1-0. You say, how did that happen? Well, they played differently. In fact, they just sort of made up the rules as they went then. And so Yale won the game 1-0. Long story short, we could go on about this. Teddy Roosevelt liked what he saw. He liked football. Now, the president of Harvard at that time did not like football. The president of Harvard at that time, his name was Charles W. Eliot. He is described as probably the single most important person in the history of higher education in the United States. And Mr. Eliot was a progressive. He hated football. He hated baseball. He hated all team sports. He thought that competition motivated players to conduct themselves in ways he considered unbecoming of a gentleman. He said if a baseball pitcher threw a curveball, that he was being deceptive. And so Mr. Eliot, he hated team sports. And, you know, we see the fruit of the progressive mindset today in our society. When you have so many schools, they've just done away with physical education in the school. They don't want there to be any physical competition whatsoever. When you go to a peewee football game or a soccer game and find out, as I did as a young parent many years ago, that with these little ones, they don't even encourage keeping score. No, we don't want to have a winner and a loser. That's a progressive type mindset. Well, I'll tell you, when I was little and playing t-ball, they were very, very diligent to keep score. And you wanted to win, because if you won, they would take you out to the ice cream store, the ice cream parlor after. So winning, there was a reward for that. Well, now you get a reward whether you do any good or not. Times have changed. But Mr. Elliott, he had an adversary whose name was Walter Camp. Now, Walter Camp is the closest thing to football's founding father. He was one of the players in that game that Teddy Roosevelt watched in 1876. Walter Camp was in that. Now, Teddy Roosevelt sent a letter several years after that to Walter Camp. Walter Camp was involved in this controversy to keep football in the colleges. And in 1895, shortly before he became president of the New York City Police Commission, he wrote a letter to Walter Camp. And I want to read that to you. This is very interesting. This is from Teddy Roosevelt before he became president of the United States. Writing to Walter Camp, he said, "I am very glad to have a chance of expressing to you the obligation which I feel all Americans are under to you for your championship of athletics. The man on the farm and in the workshop here, as in other countries, is apt to get enough physical work. But we were tending steadily in America to produce sedentary classes. Even in the early 1900s, we were producing a class of people that all they did was sit around when they went to work, office work, things along those lines. So," he says, "and from this, the athletic spirit has saved us. Of all games, I personally like football the best, and I would rather see my boys play it than see them play any other. I have no patience with the people who declaim against it because it necessitates rough play and occasional injuries. The rough play, if confined within manly and honorable limits, is an advantage. It is a good thing to have the personal contact about which the New York Evening Post snarls so much. And no fellow is worth his salt if he minds an occasional bruise or cut. Being nearsighted, I was not able to play football in college, and I never cared for rowing or baseball, so that I did all my work in boxing and wrestling. They are both good exercises, but they are not up to football. I am utterly disgusted with the attitude of President Elliott and the Harvard faculty about football. I do not give a snap for a good man who can't fight and hold his own in the world. A citizen has got to be decent, of course. That is the first requisite. But the second, and just as important, is that he shall be efficient. And he can't be efficient unless he is manly. Nothing has impressed me more in meeting college graduates during the 15 years I've been out of college than the fact that on the average, the men who have counted most have been those who had sound bodies." And so Mr. Roosevelt was an advocate of being a manly man, and he believed that football was a manly sport, and so he was for the continuance of football in our country. And I thought about this as I was reading that. What a difference between men years ago and those today who have somehow gotten in positions of leadership, but they are anything but an example of being a manly man. Wouldn't it be good in America today to have some manly men in politics, no matter which side they were on? I mean, we have a deficit of manliness in the leadership in our country. I will go further and say I believe it would be good to have more examples of manly men in the pulpits of our nation. Once upon a time, that was a prerequisite. People wouldn't go to hear mealy mouth, somebody that was weak in their constitution, in their mind, in their body. Manliness was encouraged. It would be good to have manly men in the schools, in the elementary schools, in the high schools. And if you have noticed, and I had an article a while back talked about the absence of men in the elementary schools. Well, in 1905, we're moving along. We started in 1876, 1895, now 10 years later, 1905, the controversy was still raging concerning football. And Teddy Roosevelt was the president. He decided to do what he could to save the sport of football, and he invited Walter Camp, who he wrote the letter to, and also the coaches of Harvard and Princeton to the White House. You know, presidents have been inviting people to the White House for many years, and Teddy Roosevelt tried to do something to save football. And he invited these men to come to the White House and sit down and discuss the future of football in the United States of America. Now, here's something interesting from history. This was in 1905. They formed a group of what we know today as the NCAA. You hear about that all the time, National Collegiate Athletic Association. Well, it was formed as a result of that meeting. And what they did as a result of that, they came together, these men, they agreed that football needed to have some changes to make it safer because it was a dangerous sport when it first started out. I mean, people did. They literally got killed. Every year somebody would die playing football. But they came together. They changed the rules. They agreed on the rules. They changed some things to make football safer and to keep football alive in America. So it received a makeover, and freedom prevailed. Believe it or not, in Teddy Roosevelt, we have a leader who actually helped solve a problem instead of making one worse. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? Well, Americans, we used to be a self-governing people. Progressives, bureaucracies, they will never be satisfied until they've removed every freedom known to man in the interest of safety. And they will be successful if we sit back and allow it to happen. Could it be that the war against football is just part of the liberal culture's war against manliness? I believe it is. Well, the Bible says, 1 Corinthians 16:13, watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong. Noah's going to come, give the contact information.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wynn Greer at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church that's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you can contact us, you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org.